Why are people not caring? Why they don't want to go to the doctors? Why do they feel uncomfortable?
I'm Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick, founder of Grapevine Health and your host of the Grapevine Health Podcast, a podcast highlighting stories, health insights, and experiences of community members. We started this podcast because too often discussions and decision-making about health and the healthcare system don't include perspectives from the people we serve. So listeners, if you have a personal story or an experience from working in the community or on the front lines of healthcare, contact us and we might have you on the show. Today, I'm talking to DeAndra Godwin Randolph, a community health worker who's here to talk about her experiences working on the front lines and as a patient in the healthcare system. Thanks for chatting with me today. Why don't you introduce yourself before we jump into our what I'm sure will be a fascinating conversation.
So I am DeAndra Godwin Randolph. I am a very, very, very passionate community health worker within the DC and Maryland and Virginia area, and currently have a lot of focus right now with prevention coordination working more with PrEP right now.
What is PrEP?
So PrEP is a form of medication, which is Descovy or Truvada, through a manufacturing company called Gilead, that allow people to have a form of pre-prophylactic medicine.
Pre-exposed prophylaxis,
form of medication to help them not contract HIV. It does not protect them from other STIs as far as chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis, though.
So I bet you're hearing a lot of interesting misinformation in the community, aren't you?
Yes.
You want to share some? What's the wildest thing you've heard, let's say, in the last year?
So one of the wildest things that I've heard was at the beginning of the pandemic, when some providers have actually felt as though if you are African-American, you contracting corona was very slim.
Providers?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Yes. I had heard that rumor in the community, but I didn't hear that from healthcare providers. Wow.
And it was a nurse practitioner too, actually. So yes, I thought that was the wildest thing ever.
Wow. And then what about HIV specifically? I know there's also a lot of misinformation out there about HIV. Anything come to mind?
In terms of with HIV, I want to honestly say it brings me back to PrEP, because a lot of women of color, primarily heterosexual women, does not feel as though PrEP is for them. It's not really marketing for them.
So what are they saying?
They just, if I mention it or talk about, before doing prevention, I was doing HIV care coordination and like Ryan White program management. So I did a lot of things based upon connecting people who are recently reactive until actually being diagnosed positive with HIV to like housing and food benefits, mental and behavioral health, and so on and so on. So I will always still just promote what PrEP was, especially if they were positive clients but had negative partners. So, and a lot of them would say, well, I thought that was just if it was a straight couple, if the woman was negative, she would say, well, I thought it was a gay person's drug, because that's where she see a lot of the promoting when it comes to like Descovy. Once the FDA approved, it was just a lot of like man on man. And they will probably mention the reason for this, you know, why Descovy is for these particular clients of interest. But it still is like, well, if they still have a form of medicine like Truvada still existing, rather brand or generic, well, why are they still not promoting, you know, PrEP for women? That's somewhat where I feel I need to come in and really, you know, put a little bit of my sizzle on things, because, you know, those are women like me. And it's okay that you don't know, but at least I can provide the education behind it so they can know.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
That's such an important topic. Just HIV in general is its own topic, and maybe we could have a conversation down the road about that. What I want to talk to you about today, though, mostly is your thoughts about why people don't engage in healthcare and what the experience is like, especially for Medicaid patients or people who don't have insurance. And I know you have some thoughts about this. So why are people not engaging in healthcare consistently?
It's a lot of different things. I'm going to go personal before just, you know, generalizing it. So I lost my mom 2 years ago, and my mom is a true Washingtonian. My mom grew up within like Congress Heights, D.C. and Southeast. She was one of those type of patients that was extremely noncompliant. My mom believed
you're
in,
using that word noncompliant. I don't like that word. It's judgmental.
She was, though.
Tell me why.
Because my mom believed in recipes and things like that. You know, if the doctor say don't eat pork because it'll make your blood pressure go up, she would say it's okay to have chitlins because I could put an onion in it and onion will be good for my blood pressure. So she would find different avenues to go to just still get the things that she want. My mother had very poor health. My mom was a smoker at the age of 16. She stopped in her 30s because a neighbor had a heart attack and bad health from smoking. So she finally went cold turkey, but she ended up having lymphedema. My mom had very high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, diabetes, all these things. And she still wouldn't even go and get a mammogram, a colonoscopy, or a pap smear. She died at the age of 55.
Why wouldn't she go?
She just said she just didn't feel like people poking on her. She didn't like the thought of going to see different specialists and having like residents see her and not the doctor initially. If she was kind of like out of it, she felt like she was being judged when she got through the door, you know, not knowing that my mom is very intelligent, very smart. Some of the illnesses she had kind of like made her appearance a little different. So she wasn't comfortable. And then she eventually had to go to wound care because my mom ended up developing wounds in her lower extremities. So she would go do that. It took her a long time to do that. She didn't tell us about her wounds. She was trying to fix them at home. She just wasn't comfortable.
How was she trying to fix them at home? What was she doing?
She would have my dad like go to the nearest pharmacy and get gauze. And she would put gauze there, or she would go on Amazon and get like sodium chloride or something, like all kinds of things, and literally do it. And it took one of my brothers, because I've been married going on 12 years, so I haven't been home in a long time. But it took one of my brothers to reach out and say, I think mom is experiencing something and she did not, you know, want to reach out to you, don't want to let you know. And I had to take a pause. Of course, it's my mom. You only get one mom. And I went over there and I'm like, oh, absolutely not. And from the smell of it, and me working in wound care and hyperbaric, I'm like, okay, this could possibly be MRSA. This doesn't look nice. And my mom ended up having MRSA. So it was just all these different things. And I said, you know, that's an issue. And some of those things need to be, you know, have attention to it, because why are people not caring? Why they don't want to go to the doctors? Why do they feel uncomfortable?
Why is it?
I just think it could be like, based on our previous conversation, I told you I go from the front door. So it's at hello for me, how you greet me, how you take my card, how you ask for my information. And from there, when I speak to the provider, what are you saying to me? Are you comfortable having a conversation with me? If I tell you certain things that I do sexually, are you comfortable with listening to that? So for me, it goes through all of those things. Not making assumptions, but asking questions.
Do you have a personal experience that highlights how you feel healthcare providers or the health system did not treat you with respect?
I had to go through a lot of OBGYNs, because when I would talk about like my history of pregnancies, and I have 4 children, and they look at how old, I'm 36, my oldest is 19. So that judgment come in, you know, oh, you started early. Yes, I did. And happily married. Yeah, I did. We started early.
Okay. Next. So that part is like, okay, how many times people going to tell me I start early? What does that have to do with me looking at birth control or looking at other options?
Because what is like what do you think is behind that question?
I feel like it's a form of judgment, you know? And then they look at your insurance. No, I'm not on Medicaid.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So it's just like, oh my goodness, I don't know, just like the stuff that wrap around these things that we pay attention to. And maybe if I wasn't in healthcare, I probably wouldn't pick up on stuff so quick. But being in healthcare and touching so many different like specialties and offices, I mean, from pediatrics to, again, wound care, hyperbaric, podiatry, all these different things, it's like I really get an understanding of people think it's segregation based upon your race. No, it's segregation with insurance, too.
Say more.
And I realized that in working in a pediatric office and when it came to vaccines and how they have one pot for your private insurance, then they have another pot for your Medicaid. And
say more. What do you mean? You said so, one pie or one pot?
One pot. So like one is one, you know, section of vaccines for those who have private insurance. And then it's another for those who have Medicaid. And if those patients come in and the Medicaid covered vaccines are out, they can't take from private insurance.
Wow.
And I started to see, and this was like early on. I've been in healthcare for 18 years. So it's been that early on. And I'm like, that's crazy. But what if that patient really needed? You mean to tell me that we still know because the state paid for this? And then that, and I said, okay, so going further down in the years, I'm like, it's not just because you're Black, you're white, or you're this or you're that. It happens in so many different ways.
What's another way it happens?
I feel like it happened like that with the corona vaccine a little bit.
Okay, go on.
You know, because you have, well, of course, we want to do the 65 and up. We want to hurry up and get them vaccinated. I'm totally for that. I'm not against that. But there may still be people underage with other illnesses that might be just at a higher risk than somebody that's 65 and up. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at it that way, or how you got people that are good friends of mine that are essential workers, but they don't, you know, get benefits. So they didn't really know that they can get vaccinated with the vaccine if they wasn't insured. So they just going around and like, oh, I can't get it because I don't have insurance. No, you can still get it. But based upon the questionnaire, it's asking them, are you insured? It don't say, well, if you're not, it's okay. If you are, can you please put your insurance information here for administrative purposes?
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. We're not doing a good job communicating why we're doing things. And nope. Do you think by not communicating why we're doing things, we're impacting people's ability or willingness to engage in care?
I absolutely do. I truly do believe that it's just one of those things where it's just like that ticket. If you don't have that coverage, then you can't get through the gate. And I'm a strong believer of no barriers to care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's there and it's available and we can afford it, then we need to do it because we're losing people. Before I changed my position within the pandemic, and I was, again, doing the HIV care coordination, we lost like 6 patients within the first 6 months of the pandemic that was HIV positive.
You talked earlier about bias and people judging you based on what kind of insurance you have and so on. In your case, having 4 children and starting early. Mm-hmm. This is a topic that is very prevalent right now, talking about bias in the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting a lot of lip service, but what can we actually do about it?
I feel if you give, I can say this to you, they've conducted bias sessions for the staff. They broke us up, whites and people of color. And the thing that really turned me off with having those bias sessions that I think is honestly still taking place, and they did it with like professional coaches and stuff. They start, but they never finish. You take our stories, you take the testimonies. I worked with a provider there who's called me a Black BITCH. It didn't let me up off my game because I know who I am and I know who I'm not. And I'm confident in my walk.
But these things exist. HR know, the union knows, these professional bias session coaches knows, but you get no solution. So what's the point of wanting to know and you don't really fix anything?
What is the solution?
The solution.
Everybody's trying to figure out how to address this. So what do you think the solution is or are? Maybe there are multiple solutions.
Really putting decision makers in the seat that don't show favoritism.
So I'm going to designate you as the CEO of a hospital that sees Medicaid patients.
Pressure.
What are you going to do to address all the issues you just raised?
I definitely feel like thorough training is very necessary. You get into these places and you think training is only necessary from people with all these different degrees. I don't have nothing against people's, you know, license and how their criteria of stuff and how they get to where they are in their career. But also you got people around just based upon experience that can also be a form of an educator. And allowing them to show you the way, then you can know. Leaders create leaders. So if I don't have a degree, but I have so much experience with certain things, if you feel like I can be a person that can train and be a voice, allow me to do that. If I feel this person who's been an advocate for over 40 years can be a person that can come and show you things, then I would want them to come and do that. So very thorough training. And again, being comfortable. And if you're not comfortable, sometimes being uncomfortable is just as great because it'll teach you how to be comfortable.
Anything else you do as CEO?
Utilizing people of necessary strengths.
What does that mean?
So people will, CEOs I've experienced, I feel put people in a seat, again, based on their credentials. But somebody else could sit in that seat and can do circles around that newly credentialed individual.
Yeah.
I see it all the time. And it's like, utilize people at their strength. If you know this is what they're good at, use that. If you know this is what they're good at, use that. Everybody can't do administrative work. Everybody can't do clinical work. Everybody can't do community outreach. Everybody can't get on a phone and be a switchboard operator. So you have to utilize people where their strengths lie.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think we don't?
Credentials. I think people really look at stuff based on credentials. And it's like, well, I know this person had their master's 10 times. I know they can do it. It's not true. I've trained people with masters. That's not true.
That has to be frustrating, huh?
It is. I guess it is if you look at the income, but I'm an outcome person. So I want to see results.
I like that.
I like income, but I love outcome because I feel quality, you know, quality will bring so much more in based on quantity. You could give me 10 million people, but if I give them crap, then they're not going to return. But if you give me 5, they'll return with 10 people each person. So absolutely, like, no, it's the outcome for me. I've always said that, and I stand by that. I've taken pay cuts because of an outcome. And then I've got what I deserved in the end.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Deandra.
You're welcome. I love talking with you.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye.
That was Deandra Godwin Randolph offering suggestions about how to address bias in our healthcare system.
Thanks for listening to the Grapevine Health Podcast. Our producer is Nicholas Elias. Please like us on social media. You can find us at Grapevine Health on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram, and on Twitter at Health Grapevine. Until next time, I'm Dr. Lisa, signing off.